This podcast is sponsored in part by our friends at Fairwinds. Whether you're new to Kubernetes or have some experience under your belt and then definitely don't want to deal with Kubernetes, there are some things you should simply never, ever do in Kubernetes. I would say run it at all. They would argue with me, and that's okay, because we're going to argue about that. Kendall Miller, president of Fairwinds, was one of the first hires at the company and has spent the last 6 years making the dream of disrupting infrastructure a reality while keeping his finger on the pulse of changing demands in the market and valuable partnership opportunities. He joins senior site reliability engineer Stevie Caldwell, who supports a growing platform of microservices running on Kubernetes in AWS. I'm joining them as we all discuss what dev and ops teams should not do in Kubernetes if they want to get the most out of the leading container orchestrator by volume and complexity. We're going to speak anecdotally of some Kubernetes failures and how to avoid them, and they're going to verbally punch me in the face. Sign up now at fairwinds.com/never. That's fairwinds.com/never. When I wrote about turning down an AWS job offer a couple of years ago, I had a whole bunch of people ranging from multiple VPs to remarkably senior managers or engineers or individual contributors to aggrieved ex-employees all come out of the woodwork to help explain to me how AWS approaches paying people. I've been keeping notes on everything I've learned here for a while. Around January each year, Amazon begins adjusting compensation as part of their annual performance cycle. In celebration of a new year, let's dig into what this means for AWS employees. I want to be very clear that this is oriented to technically involved roles, namely software engineers, solutions architects, TAMs, and similar roles. I'm sure that product managers, the sales folks, senior executives, etc., all have different compensation models. I have no particular insight into those facets, but I do suspect there might be valuable nuggets for them tucked away here. I'd further like to say that this is what I've pieced together from a variety of public postings from folks sharing their compensation. I may very well have failed to capture a nuance or two. I'm thrilled to update the blog post version of this recording if there's a meaningful departure from reality. Remember, I've never worked at AWS because for all of their faults, they do have hiring standards. So let's get into AWS's philosophy of compensation. This applies to all of Amazon, but I'm going to focus on the AWS segment because it avoids a whole mess of other stuff that applies to folks working in fulfillment centers, such as contract delivery drivers and other roles. Consider how AWS views itself. From their worldview, you're joining AWS because the stock is going to grow the most. You'll get to work with the people that you have decided are the best. I mean, if you work at AWS and hate your coworkers, you're welcome to disagree and commit with that statement. And you're going to get more job options because you work there. From where I sit as an AWS outsider, they're largely correct. Furthermore, there's nothing wrong with this viewpoint. We're career poison isn't how most companies view themselves. And even the ones that should, like Facebook, manage to soldier on and continue to hire people anyway. It aligns incentives to view things this way. And as a result, AWS is built to pay people the most when Amazon stock goes up. There's also an argument that the company is really good at optimizing for free cash flow and should therefore pay as little cash to people as possible, opting instead to make stockholders pay for employees. Nobody can argue that this model hasn't done great things for Amazon and AWS employees who've ridden the stock up. Today, it's worth over 6 times what it was worth 5 years ago. Daniel Vassallo talks about leaving a $500,000 a year L6 role there back in 2019. In his post, Only Intrinsic Motivation Lasts. We have multiple sources citing that AWS VPs make 7 figures a year. So don't try to argue any of this with the people who have benefited from it and are true believers. They're too busy yelling at me on Twitter about this podcast to listen to you argue anyway. So let's say you're starting to talk to Amazon. You want to change the world, or at least operate at the kind of scale where the things you work on resonate globally. I know, you exclaim, and apply to work at AWS by visiting amazon.jobs. You pass the ritualistic hazing known as the interview loop, and your recruiter reaches out to you 4 days past their internal SLA for getting back to candidates with a job offer. Congratulations, AWS is a great place to work. I'm serious, That's what they say when they extend an offer to you. Congratulations. It's the same energy as when I write congratulations on my wife's Valentine's Day card and roughly as appropriate. AWS believes that you're a big winner here. AWS hires the best, and if a member of the best has decided to offer you a role, you might be the best too. That'll be determined by whether you accept the role or not. It's your shot at greatness. You will gain oh so very much more than mere money by working at AWS. You'll learn to do things the AWS way, making you incredibly valuable to other companies when you eventually leave. That's a form of compensation that can't be taxed. So, how does Amazon build your offer? The AWS goal is to pay you roughly 50 to 65% of what the market will pay you based upon a variety of sources plus some work with Excel. That comes with some caveats that I'll address in a moment. Remember that the market rate is often defined by big name organizations and varies as you move from one to the next. Companies like Google, Microsoft, Snowflake, Databricks, and other brand name successes might have really deep pockets, but that doesn't apply to the entire tech market, I assure you. If you peruse levels.fyi, entries for lesser-known companies, you'll find that the market rate number is lower than you might expect by talking to just the big tech firms. A few conversations with other companies puts Microsoft at around 75% of market rate, Google at 95% of market rate, and Netflix at top of market, which is just absurd. Seriously, if cash compensation is all that you value, you want to talk to either Netflix or a finance company. As a result, many people find themselves receiving an offer from AWS that is underwhelming. When they come back with a politely worded form of, "Really? You're trying to pay me less than I make now or was offered at other places?" AWS has no problem responding with, "Yes, that's right. If you want that better money, you should take it." Many smart people do, and many of them don't. No judgment here. As an aside, I maintain that the best way to negotiate a big tech company offer is via reaching out to my friend Josh Duty at fearlesssalarynegotiation.com and tell him I sent you. I would hire him myself in a heartbeat if I were contemplating working at a big tech company myself. No question. That is not a paid sponsorship. That is simply, I believe in what he does. Now, this gets a lot more complicated, but the number that they're naming is initial target compensation. No employee gets paid more than the minimal amount of cash. In Seattle or other non-premium market, that means $160,000 a year. In San Francisco and New York, the premium markets, that can get to as high as $185,000 a year. International compensation gets super weird due to labor law issues, which I'm not fully versed with. So if this doesn't apply to your non-US market, please take it as a failure on my part. Email corrections are, of course, welcome. Given that Amazon equity is backloaded or doesn't vest significantly until the employee's third year of employment, there's also frequently a cash signing bonus that vests over the first 2 years. Pay attention to this. This is the first and last cash bonus you'll get from Amazon. The rest is all stock compensation. That's right. Past that initial $160,000 a year, you're getting stock only. I've checked. You can't use stock to pay for fancy dinners, your kids' private school, or your third yacht, depending on your lifestyle. You'll need to sell shares to afford a lifestyle that demands more than that. How much stock you're going to get is going to vary based upon role, negotiating position, when you joined, and a whole host of other factors that I'm not privy to. But baked into that stock grant is the assumption that your stock grant will grow 15% per year, as per Amazon's own admission in its SEC proxy declaration. Seriously, you will get your offer, and the interesting parts will all be in shares. Talk to other Amazonians about their share grants and when they joined. Over the years, the number of shares decreases year over year because they're building that 15% growth number into the stock. Now, I don't mean to make assumptions around where you are in your career, but think for a minute about what getting a stock grant that assumes a 15% growth implies. If you could take a job at Microsoft, Google, Netflix, or another company that doesn't do this, you would get an offer that doesn't have this growth assumption baked in. If you genuinely believe, as an article of faith, that Amazon will go up 15% without fail, you could objectively make more money taking an alternate offer and just investing all of your spare income into Amazon stock. Since they pay top dollar, why not work for Netflix instead? You can spend your days solving complex, impactful challenges and invest whatever extra income you get from this decision into Amazon. It's really the best of both worlds. You'll end up with the same amount of disposable cash and almost certainly more shares of Amazon stock. That's a great investment hedge too, since your personal career trajectory and your investments will no longer be linked to the same company doing well. From an optimizing for the most money perspective, you can even do the math as to whether or not you have sufficient investment funds to invest, assuming that Amazon's going to grow 15% year over year, and then not even take the job in the first place. Now, you could say, wait a minute, I'm an engineer or a PM or I'm a crap service namer. I'm not an investor. Cool. Great. Neither am I. Let's assume you take an AWS job for any number of reasons. Congratulations. It truly is a great place to work with amazing people, except for whoever named AWS Trainium. And you choose to get paid less than other places you could have worked. So clearly, you know what you're doing. This episode is sponsored in part by our friends at New Relic. If you're like most environments, you probably have an incredibly complicated architecture, which means that monitoring it is going to take a dozen different tools. And then we get into the advanced stuff. We all have been there and know that pain, or will learn it shortly. And New Relic wants to change that. They've designed everything you need in one platform with pricing that's simple and straightforward. And that means no more counting hosts. You also can get one user and 100 gigabytes per month totally free. To learn more, visit newrelic.com. Observability made simple. Now, let's get into your next reward season that your recruiter and manager absolutely didn't tell you existed. First, understand that your first year and some of your second year is likely to be all cash compensation because they backload their stock vesting. Your first year, 5% of your stock grant vests. In year two, 15% of your stock grant vests. This is generally not a lot of money relative to the rest, so that shortfall is made up via a cash signing bonus that vests during this period. When you get hired, there's a cash compensation target, though I'm not sure what they're calling it. From what I can tell, that's determined jointly by recruiting, human resources, and your manager. That's what you're really negotiating when you mistakenly think you're negotiating other things. It really is the sole thing that's going to determine your pay for the near-term future. And remember, no matter what you end up with, it will be lower compared to salaries for peer roles at other companies. The next year, you're going to get that same salary, the stock that you've been awarded after 12 months, 5%, and then the remainder of the two-year cash signing bonus. Then in year three, all of the cash signing bonus is gone, and it's just your salary and the stock award. I want to point out here that Amazon stock has been growing like gangbusters, and anyone who's joined in the past decade has seen well over 15% annual stock growth, which is great. That said, it's also not something you can actively plan on when choosing a role. Past performance does not indicate future behavior, and the stock market does not reliably go up and to the right. Secondly, if you start after some date in early January of 2021, you will not be eligible for new rewards in 2022 because you haven't been there for a full year. Surprise! Your recruiter certainly did not tell you this part. Raises are tied to calendar years, not years of service. Third, let's imagine for a second that you're an Amazonian who's still in your initial offer timeline or have grants that lay over into your current timeframe. Let's say the stock has gone up over 15% just before the discussion, such as what happened in 2020. COVID-19 was an unexpected bonus to Amazon's comp model. Let's further say that you've been the top performing person on your team and you know it. Congratulations, you're going to go to a meeting with your manager and your manager is going to say something that distills down to this. Thanks for coming. You're great. We love you. I can't tell you your rating. Note, this is rumored to no longer be true now for 2021, which is a great thing. But did I say that we love you? We love you. And congratulations, you're making more than we meant to give you when we first hired you. Congrats some more. You can keep that. Wait, you thought I was going to give you more stock? More salary? A bonus? Those aren't really a thing here. No, congrats once again. You're getting paid more than we meant to pay you. The stock has done well, way better than we expected. Here's a list of our entire executive team's email addresses, should you wish to send them polite thank you notes. Now get the hell out of my office and send in the next crap service namer, please. That's right. Your comp isn't being adjusted one iota, regardless of whether you're the top performer on your team or incredibly close to being placed on a PIP or dismissed. Note that there are scattered reports of top performers being given some kind of equity refresh, but invariably, it's relatively paltry compared to their expectations. Fourth, right around year three or so, AWS decides whether they want to retain you or not. That's a somewhat harsh description of what's being done, but fundamentally, when you get the stock grants and they resemble a six-figure year-over-year pay cut, they're sending you a message, and that's not the friendly kind. Conversely, if you get a pile of stock that makes you feel awesome, that's them signaling that they'd really prefer that you stick around. If this is you and the stock growth blew past your expectations, including the 15% growth that was baked in, I would encourage you to remember that this was a happy accident of employee retention. If AWS really wants you gone, they have alternate processes for that. So, all of this said, should you sign a board with AWS? The answer is a strong maybe. Will you work with great people, push the envelope, be paid well in the grand scheme of things, and learn a lot? Probably. But it'll greatly depend upon which team and which people you work with. There are jerks and losers at every big company. Some folks love their time at AWS, while others hate it. My advice is this: take the role if and only if it benefits what you're really looking for. Will you get to work with people you think are the best on problems that interest you the most? Take the job. Otherwise, make sure you think through the decision long and hard, as there are many variables to consider, just like there are with most things in life. Now, in true Amazonian fashion, let me address a frequently asked question that a couple early reviewers of this podcast asked me. Wait, what the hell do you mean by they're trying to get me to leave voluntarily in year three? I kind of expected that that would get some feedback. By the start of your third year at AWS, you'll know if you're in or out. The pattern generally looks like this. In year one, you're learning the equivalent of where the bathrooms are. Nothing is really expected of you past the usual perform at your job. Year two, that's when it becomes time to see what you're really made of. AWS will generally load you up in scope so you can prove your worth to them. Year three, they're telling you what they learned in year two. It's either a yes, you're here and one of us, or it's a no, we expect you to leave after 4 years. I want to be very clear. Some of my close Amazonian friends will be hurt by this blunt assessment as they look back at their own career trajectory over many years at AWS. That's not by design. It's a dawning realization that I've come to based upon dozens of conversations held over years with Amazonians about their compensation. It's my fervent hope that these words will help you determine whether working at AWS makes sense for you, or whether you're more keen on getting a salary that reflects what you're actually worth by looking elsewhere.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.